I'm Afshin Ratansi, and welcome back to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the UAE, as well as this week's 11th anniversary of Kiev's attack on Ukrainians living in Donbass. Today is the birthday of Peter the Great. Born 353 years ago today, the first emperor of Russia is credited as creating the major European power it is today. For Lenin, he was the great reformer, not because he was a tyrant, but because he broke with feudal inertia. For Vladimir Putin, it has been important to recall that Peter the First could fight and win a war after 21 years, as Russia now fights a proxy war against 32 NATO member countries, plus Ukraine. Despite denials from the White House, rumors are flying that Trump administration officials, like the Pentagon's Pete Hegseth, let alone Britain's MI6 and Israel's Mossad, would have been aware of a Kiev attack on nuclear strategic bombers in Russia hours before last week's Ukraine-Russia peace talks in Istanbul. Joining me again from Falls Church, Virginia, is the 30-year veteran U.S. Army officer who was chief of staff at the U.S. State Department when NATO powers invaded Iraq. Retired Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Colonel, thanks so much for coming back. I can see already the horror on your face from repeating the news of strategic bombers under the START Treaty had to be out in the open being destroyed. I mean, this Japanese Financial Times, Russia reels from epic failure to stop Ukrainian drone attack on bombers. The glee palpable in the Salzburger family's New York Times. Kiev's strikes are both strategic and symbolic. Actually, you would probably agree that they are symbolic. What was your take on the denials from the White House, I think, and State Department, that Trump knew anything about Ukraine's UK-US-EU armed strikes on Russia's nuclear strategic bombers on June the 1st?
I'm sad to say, as both a former military professional and a citizen of the United States and the Empire, I'm sad to say that it's probably true. This president is so detached from detail, and I don't just mean detail as in small items, I mean everything, that I could believe that it came as a surprise to him. Not one that might necessarily be unwelcome, but a surprise nonetheless.
You're interesting that Ukraine, quick to say, it was an attack 18 months in the planning. So obviously when Biden, Genocide Joe, is in power in the White House. Do you think militarily it would have been possible for this attack to go under the radar, literally, of the CIA, the Five Eyes, and all the other NATO paraphernalia that monitors these things?
You left out Mossad, and absolutely no, but that's not saying that Donald Trump knew that it was going to happen or that it was being planned.
But of course, if these NATO intelligence agencies knew that this strike was being planned with European Union, British and American arms, do you think that Putin, who I think again is saying all options are on the table, and as European leaders, Western European leaders often say, he's just bluffing, clear that there's not going to be the kind of symmetric response that you'd have expected, say, in the 1980s?
I don't expect Putin to do anything but what is prudent, circumspect, and adds to the victory he's already deepened profoundly, and in many respects, won. Whether that will mean what looks like devastating attacks on Ukraine or indeed other NATO members remains to be seen. But he's won, and he doesn't need to do anything. They're in Istanbul. They've presented their positions. Both are intractable positions. But Russia's won. This is over in terms of ground combat. Now, they can do these silly things, deadly things, like throwing drones at each other and doing other things like that. Ukraine principally, but Ukraine is now driving vans around its country with goon squads, kidnapping people on the street to fill the ranks of its military. They've lost. So this is just a matter of figuring out what's going to be the parameters of the cessation of hostilities. And let me point out that could go on a long time. It could go on for months. It could go on for years. But I don't think it's going to be anytime soon, and I don't think it's going to be bells and whistles about a peace agreement being achieved.
And how to get that into the president's brain as you intimated earlier. I mean, what did you make of Tulsi Gabbard's leaks that she may be hiring a Fox News producer so that the daily briefing can be given to President Trump in a sort of video format because he can't read? I'm not sure. He can't process information from documents.
If that's true, if she actually made that in a serious way, I would go along with it because that does seem to be the only thing he responds to. The written word for him is anathema. He's got J.D. Vance taking the presidential daily briefing, the vice president. And whether J.D. Vance goes in and presents really formidable kernels to the president or not is anybody's guess. I doubt he does. So only way you're going to get to Trump is through that sort of media. And that might not make much difference either, but at least it would be an attempt.
But although J.D. Vance has previously been critical, obviously, of this proxy war in the first place. And in fact, I mean, you've commented a little about it. Is it this Kellogg Cornflake descendant Iraqi Coalition Provisional Authority boss, General Kellogg? I mean, maybe you want to tell us about General Kellogg. Is it he who has Trump's ear rather than J.D. Vance, rather than Director of National Intelligence? And I don't know, more than the head of the CIA, John Ratcliffe, even.
Well, I don't think Kellogg has Trump's ear either. I think what Witkoff has is...
He's the envoy on Ukraine, I should say. Yeah,
special envoy. Ukraine and the rest of the world, thank you very much. Steve Witkoff is probably the only person that can walk into Trump's office and talk to him and expect some kind of reaction. The only one, Rubio.
Yeah, but it was Kellogg. But it was Kellogg, obviously, who had told him, or not told him, about the assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin as he got out of a plane, or was it a helicopter, Marine One, or something, saying, "Oh, look, it's terrible what Putin is doing." As if he had no idea that there had been an assassination attempt on the Russian president.
Yeah, I think it was on the tarmac in front of his plane. And it was a stunning moment, really, but not so much for me with this president because I've come to know him, I think, fairly well. He's detached from all manner of detail. That he would not have known about that seems impossible, but not given Trump. Again, things are transpiring beneath his visibility. Things transpire beneath every president's visibility, particularly since the 9/11 attacks on the United States. The CIA and others associated with the CIA, principally Mossad, get away with murder in terms of doing things underneath the president's visibility. Now, on occasion, it's a case of, as it was with Dwight Eisenhower, one dramatic moment, the coup in Iran in 1953. Don't tell me about it. Then I've got plausible deniability. Sometimes it's that. But increasingly, it's not that. It's the fact that they can get away with it. And no one ever holds them to accountability. Unless there's something really dramatic in a domestic political sense that accrues for the president. And then maybe a little accountability might be achieved. But otherwise, no one seems to give a damn.
In which case, you're being a bit mean to President Trump, arguably, because even though he has experience of internal sabotage from his first term, it's clear that these powerful forces that want forever war are ranged against him from within and from without. And even someone like Trump, who is aware of that, it's very difficult to respond.
As they were against Joe Biden. And for that matter, when I met with President Obama in the Roosevelt Room, personally met with him along with General Eaton in November of 2015, towards the end of his second term, the confession, and I'll call it that, that he made to us about Washington being a warfare capital and him not knowing what to do about it was potent and realistic. At least he realized after 7+ years in the Oval Office that he wasn't in control.
And is it your contention that American intelligence services must have been aware of the assassination attempt on Vladimir Putin's helicopter?
I can't imagine that at least part of them weren't, and I can't imagine that Mossad wasn't either. Mossad is everywhere today. Mossad is all over Ukraine. And Ukraine, for that matter, is in Syria with Mossad's connivance. So these intelligence groups are running things to a very large extent for more than just the United States of America.
Which makes it more surprising that Russia isn't responding in a bigger way to what's happening in Gaza. Obviously, big alliances Russia has in this region where I'm speaking to you from. What is Russia's response going to be on the intel plot, like the strategic bomber attack? Could it neutralize MI6 assets around the world and it'll be played tit for tat in that kind of way while the Ukraine war just slowly progresses to Odessa?
Well, my knowledge of Russia and Russia historically is that they play second fiddle to no one with regard to intelligence expertise and capabilities. So there is, to a certain extent, a war in the intelligence communities going on right now. It has its peaks and its valleys, but it nonetheless is going on, and it has been going on for some time. With the empire, it's been going on incredibly intently since 9/11 because we undid all the checks and balances on that community. There are none anymore. National Security Agency, CIA, DIA, they have pretty much free rein, and Mossad has always had free rein. I suspect that Russia's entities are similar, but probably taken a little more in consideration by Putin because of the system that Russia has. Nonetheless, they are formidable powers in the world, and there's no question that they oftentimes, especially in the West, carry out things that either because of plausible deniability, as I said, or just plain ignorance happening under the radar, the president knows nothing about.
And to the dismay.
I saw that myself when I was in government. Scary, really. Very scary.
And when you reference Mossad, to the dismay of the MAGA base, probably, no issue is greater, maybe, than Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, do you think that signals the power of Mossad and Israel in the way that you've had complete reversals from the head of the FBI, Kash Patel, and his deputy, is it, Don Bongino, and Pam Bondi, the attorney general? It's all just gone out the window. It was only 7 months ago that you can probably find them on Fox saying it's a conspiracy and so on, and now it's all silence.
Yes. And it's unquestionable that the Epstein business was heavily influenced, let me put it that way, by Mossad.
And so that's somehow emblematic on these huge geopolitical issues.
Yes. I watched Mossad take over the Pentagon in 2002. The Pentagon was infiltrated by Mossad. They did not need any identification to get through the rear entrance of the building. They went upstairs to Douglas Feith, the Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, the third most powerful man in the Defense Department. Occasionally, they went to the second most powerful man, Paul Wolfowitz, the Deputy Secretary of Defense, and they had run of the Pentagon. Donald Rumsfeld, the Secretary of Defense, said to my boss one time, "Hell, I don't run my building. Mossad does."
Colonel, I'll stop you there. More from the former chief of staff of the U.S. State Department after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, former chief of staff at the U.S. State Department. Colonel, we were talking about Trump not being the brightest, arguably, the power of Israel. One thing is certain, though, Trump does, I mean, for all the TACO, Trump always chickens out acronym stuff, he does react when he gets the information that he's been lied to or lied to by omission. I mean, there were reports that perhaps from the State Department, Eric Traeger, the former U.S. National Security Council Middle East Director, Morgan Ortega's U.S. Actually, they came, Morgan Ortega's, she came from USAID, Deputy de Witkoff, and Merav Seren, Israeli at the National Security Council, appointed by Mike Waltz, are all being changed. And Trump himself saying no sanctions should go to the Senate, a new bill against Russia. So, could he find out that unbeknownst to him, all these things have been happening, and then get very angry before a meeting with Putin?
Well, I don't know who's going to tell him. I don't think that there are people disposed to tell him within his administration. That's a problem with the people he selected for his cabinet, either because they're just pure sycophants or because they have other agendas.
But Colonel, you spoke in favor of Tulsi Gabbard as DNI, though. Wouldn't she be a candidate for telling him?
I would not speak in favor of Tulsi now. I've seen what she's done. I've heard about what she's done. I think she has become a member of the team in the sense that she covets her job so dearly that she's not standing up to what she should be standing up to. And I also don't think she gets access to Trump. I'm being told that nobody gets access to Trump other than possibly J.D. Vance coming into the Oval to tell him periodically about this or that that he heard in the presidential daily brief or some other issue. So Tulsi's not doing what she should be doing. And I've also heard that Trump did not give her what he promised, which was what the Congress did not give the DNI in the legislation, and that was power over people in the intelligence community, move them around where she wants them and when she wants them, and money. That's the real power for a director of national intelligence, and it's not there. Trump did not achieve what he said he would achieve for her. And that may have been because the Republicans in the Congress wouldn't back up and do it, because they wouldn't do it in the original legislation. They feared a DNI who was truly that powerful.
Although, of course, we know he watches Fox News. Perhaps he watches Tucker Carlson's videos online. Carlson talking about how leaving NATO might make sense for a Make America Great Again movement. Given this context, what should we be expecting in 2 weeks' time when Trump arrives in The Hague for the NATO summit?
Well, he's going to arrive in a country that just fell in terms of its government. The interesting thing there is the person who caused it to fail, to fall. This morning I heard that.
Sorry to interrupt, Colonel. Did you just intimate perhaps it was the war in Western Europe?
It could be, but I think it's more immigration. We just heard that Secretary Hegseth has declared he's not going to the meeting in Europe. So this will be the first time the United States has not been present at this meeting that, you know, puts all the NATO heads together in Brussels and talks about Ukraine. That's a strong signal. J.D. Vance has already sent signals like that. Now the Secretary of Defense is sending a strong signal. We're not coming.
That's the pre-contact group before setting the stage for the leaders' summit in The Hague. Yeah, I mean, that's never happened before. The head of the Pentagon not attended.
I think it was presaged by J.D. Vance's comments, though. I mean, this is one thing that seems coordinated, and I have to think, since it seems coordinated strategically, that J.D. Vance is probably in charge. Now, has he briefed Trump and gotten permission for all this? Probably, but I don't know that.
Yeah, and that's the Ukrainian contact group, because in the past few days, Rutte, the head of NATO, the position is always a position for failed Western European politicians. He's been saying,
I like the way you put that. And it's also people who the United States has handpicked to be there.
To do the bidding of the president, theoretically, or the deep state. Rutte saying, we are more powerful than the Roman Empire. We are more powerful than the Napoleonic Empire. We are the most powerful in world history. Kind of thing, you know, the really powerful don't tend to say things like that, arguably. So basically, we don't know what Trump's vision of the United States' place in NATO is, apart from the need for more funds coming from these beleaguered Western European economies already facing economic crisis and some say even collapse.
If there is some strategy to it, and I don't detect it right now, but I know what I've heard in the past and what Donald Trump has said in the past, including his 4 years as president previously, he would like to get out of Europe. And that means get out of Europe. No troops there. Maybe Rammstein left, because Rammstein is a critical logistics base for war with China. And it is a critical base for anything we're doing in the Middle East, in the Levant. But he would like to get out of Europe, not necessarily remove the U.S. nuclear shield over Europe, but he would like to get out of Europe. I think that is a sincere point of view that Donald Trump holds.
So all eyes on the Hague then for that. Of course, most in the region I'm speaking to you from and the whole of the Global South, and actually increasingly Western Europe and in the United States, where a Pew Research poll said most Americans have an unfavorable view of Israel. The issue is this mercenary aid operation, U.S.-Israeli aid operation. How much horror did you have hearing about it in Gaza?
Yeah, it's very clear. It's clear to me anyway, and those with whom I talk, whose views I respect on this issue, know more about it than I. It's clear to me that we connived with Israel being the lead, of course, to create a situation where they could kill more Palestinians with greater efficiency. And it's all based on aid.
And Trump knows about it, or are you going to say again, he doesn't know the particulars of it and thought, well, it stops the UN from being involved?
I think this would be something that Trump would say, don't tell me. And if it became public that he said that, or public that he knew and did nothing about it, he probably would remonstrate, but he wouldn't really do anything about it.
And how chaotic, I mean, how do you understand how chaotic it is in Kiev? Because lots of talk of people attacking Zelensky from within, and a lot of unrest, not, of course, reported in NATO nation corporate media. Could it fold in on itself ahead of the timeline of Vladimir Putin seeming to just be biding his time as the front moves forward?
Frankly, judging from my period in the government when I dealt with Ukraine for Colin Powell, and I told him one time it was the most corrupt criminal society I'd ever run into in my life, and I was dealing with North Korea at that time, mind you, I am amazed that Zelensky's still alive. Frankly, I'm amazed that he's still alive.
And would he be alive without Russia's protection?
Good question. Good question. I think we're going to see him run to one of his dashes in his Bugatti with his wife with suitcases full of U.S. cash in the back, or we're going to see him dead very shortly.
So actually, is it the slow pace of democracy that it could actually be speeding this terrible, terrible war in Western Europe to its end even before the Russian army do? I'm thinking because the new president of Poland, Naroki, doesn't particularly want the war with Russia. Lee Jae-myung in Korea, South Korea. These are people who've been attacked by their oppositions in their countries for not being sufficiently on board with this global war on Russia, this Washington proxy war on Russia. Even Farage in Britain, who's not expressed as much verve for wanting to dismember and destroy the Russian Federation.
Yeah, I'm watching Germany very closely because I'm watching Friedrich Merz very closely, former BlackRock CEO. I'd say his support in Germany right now, not totally based on his support for the war in Ukraine, but largely so, is less than 30%. So look for the German chancellor to have to either form a new coalition and change his tack on many issues, including Ukraine, or look for the collapse of the German government. That's the key.
I mean, clearly, you're critical of the attack on the strategic nuclear armed bombers of Russia. But isn't there something to be said for these Western European leaders, even Sir Keir Starmer, in that they know there's not going to be the retaliation to them? That the risks of World War III they can calculate them because they know Vladimir Putin will not retaliate.
Well, you've put it in decent context. I would just call them flaming cowards, but you've put it in good context for them. That's probably true, but that's a dicey thing to play your bets on, a really dicey thing. And while we might sit here and think that there is no problem with it because Putin wouldn't dare use a nuclear weapon, there are conditions in the rest of the world that tell me that's not necessarily a strategic calculation of worth. And I'm talking about the war in the Levant, too, and the combination of the two together and the constant leaking of one into the other, and the fact that the most dangerous nuclear state in the world is not Russia. It's not the United States, although I'd put us close. It's Israel. Not a member of the Non-Proliferation Treaty, not a signatory to the Safeguards Agreement, not an additional protocol member. Iran is actually a much safer potential nuclear weapon state than Israel is an actual weapon state. Let them get existentially threatened, which they are on the cusp of being right now. The IDF is on the cusp of collapsing, and they'll go use a nuclear weapon. Not for nothing did the BBC report in, what was it, 73, 74, that one of its reporters went to Golda Meir and asked her, if Israel were in existential shape, would she use a nuclear weapon? And she said, without doubt. BBC put that on the broadcast, and London's papers, I think it was the, wasn't the Financial Times, it might have been the Telegraph, put it on the front page the next day. We forget that. Israel is a dangerous nuclear weapon state.
And they can always leverage Trump with that. Colonel Larry Wilkerson, thank you.
Thank you.
And that's it for the show. Our continued condolences to those suffering the impact of the US-UK-EU armed genocide in Gaza. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media. If it's not censored in your country, and head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.